are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
You are indeed, and I'm Michael Sterling, and who are you?
You are. You are Michael Sterling, and I am a reasonable facsimile of Michael Sterling. Yes, I'm your alter ego. Yes.
You are.
I'm your less well-dressed alter ego with grayer hair.
That's my job.
Well,
however it rolls. I'm good, thank you. I was looking out the window here and thinking, what is going on with our weather? Because we're up and down. We have these high temperatures, and then we go down to what? We're in this low 70s today or something?
My wife gets to say something she never gets to say. Normally, she's from Chicago, and she gets up, and she looks out the window in Southern California, and she goes, another goddamn sunny day. I don't know why I made my wife sound like Brenda Vaccaro on that. I did. I just sort of little Harvey Firestein.
She's too sweet
that.
And she too is. Cute to say that,
she
right?
She is, and she's listening, so thank you
hello,
for saying
Monica.
That. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents and actors, as well as actors, when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listening sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
A misfit group of New Mexico cowboys find themselves on the journey of a lifetime when their crooked-footed racehorse qualifies for the Kentucky Derby. Based on the inspiring true story of Mind That Bird, the Cowboys face a series of mishaps on their way to Churchill Downs, becoming the ultimate underdogs in a final showdown with the world's racing elite. The film is called 50-1, now an expanded release by popular demand. We're honored to have the film's producer, director, and co-writer, Jim Wilson, with us. Welcome, Jim.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Hey, how are you, sir?
Thanks for having me.
How
Thanks
are you?
For yeah,
coming
I'm
by.
Good.
No, thank
good.
You for being on board.
Absolutely.
And we're going to, before we talk about my week, let's talk about who we're going to talk about in the second half. We're going to chat with someone at the El Portal, right?
We
are. About the upcoming show there.
Yeah.
All right. You want to give a little tease on who we're going to talk about before we talk about our week?
Well, you know what? Why don't we do that afterwards?
Okay. We can do that. Certainly. My week was good. How was yours?
It was very nice, actually. Yeah? I must say that I did go and cover a piece of theater. A new show called The Ghost of Gershwin at the Group Repertory Theater, which is a notable theater company in town.
The Lonnie Chapman
Yes,
one?
The Lonnie Chapman. Yes. And always a pleasure to go there because it's such a beautiful theater, a 99-seater. And, you know, a very good product in the making, I should say. It's got some great legs, and it's a new musical by Doug Haverty, who was a company member there.
Oh, is it a world premiere?
It was, yes, it was. And it's an interesting storyline. It's set in a contemporary situation, and a young man moves into an apartment building in New York, and lo and behold, somewhere in that building, Gershwin lived at one time, and there's a piano that's going to... no one's quite sure what's going to be done with it, but he finds out about it and gets it moved into his apartment, and suddenly music comes to him in quite a different way.
Oh, okay.
And it's a delightful score and some wonderful performances. And it is, you know, as you put things up, a new piece like this, it's always going to take some working out to get to the...
Doesn't quite have its legs yet, maybe?
You know, not completely, but it certainly
needs to gel.
It's certainly starting to stand out, yeah. So I recommend it to anybody that would like to go see something like this and hear music that is very similar in the similarly written in the style of Gershwin. It is certainly none of Gershwin's music, but it's a interesting story, good performances, lighthearted, and Group Repertory Theater. Find them online, Lonnie Chapman Theater, and it's The Ghost of Gershwin.
They're terriers over there, man. They always have something. They're scrappers. They always have something going on. There's always something up on that stage. It's one of the great little venues in town.
They're ambitious.
Lonnie Chapman, yeah.
And your week, sir?
My week was good. As you know, I came back from Chicago. I think I talked about this last week, but actually it was the short film that I wrote, The Beating, spoke to the students at Columbia College about it, along with Nancy Meyer, who was talking about marketing, and that's how I was alerted to this film. We got to watch the trailer to it, and it's nice when those things sort of progress into other things. So I was happy about that.
Good for you.
So, but good to be back. And also, I should say, in some shameless, not self-promotion, because I'm not in this one.
Not you,
but,
Paul.
But not me. I prepared this slideshow. The final week of Wake, Sieglas Theater's Wake
right.
at the Fremont Center Theater.
That's
we have yet to I don't have to knock wood anymore because I don't have to say we haven't gotten a bad review, but we're not going to get any more reviews. So all the reviews have been great. We're 100% positive.
And a nice endorsement today from Don Shirley.
Yes, and Don Shirley's article.
Los Angeles Times, yeah.
And so it's seaglasstheater.org, last four shows this weekend, and just couldn't be happier.
Come early and go eat at Gus's, is that right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
In South Pasadena, go get the barbecue. And you can walk to it. You could actually park at the theater and walk to Fair Oaks, walk up half a block.
And then you'd probably really need to have that
walk
back
to
the theater.
You walk it off for your cholesterol.
Boy.
All right. Let's get to this. Our first guest here, 50-1, is based on the inspiring true story of Mind That Bird, a 50-1 long shot in the 2009 Kentucky Derby. The film was shot in over 40 locations across New Mexico, Kentucky, California, including racetracks where Mind That Bird ran during his racing career. Our first guest is the producer and director and co-writer of the film. He won the Academy Award for Best Picture for Dances with Wolves, which he produced. Other producing credits include The Bodyguard, Wyatt Earp, Swing Vote, and Message in a Bottle. Directing credits, Head Above Water, Whirligirl, and the critically acclaimed documentary about Hall of Fame jockey, I hope I'm getting this name right, Lafitte Pinkay Jr.?
Beautiful. Lafitte Pinkay. He has Lafitte Pinkay.
Lafitte Pinkay.
Goes both ways.
Oh, Lafitte conjunctivitis. All about winning. That's terrible. I'm sure he's heard that joke his entire life. My apologies, sir. My apologies. We are honored to be joined in studio today by Mr. Jim Wilson. Jim, thank you so much for that.
Absolutely.
How are you?
I'm good.
I'm excited to hear because I looked at your trailer this morning and several other things that I was reading up on here in this beautiful press kit that your PR people provided. And just from the trailer alone, it's like, I'm there.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Exactly. Yeah.
Gotta go.
And that was the thing. That was what was so impressive about when we watched it in Tara Lanzo's Producing One class at Columbia and watched the trailer there with all the students. And that was exactly the vibe. It's just the trailer. These are, let's face it, college students are not known for being sort of visually or vocally into anything. Many of them are just a little too cool for school.
A little aloof.
Yeah. But they were leaning forward. They were into it. They were very, very interested in the film. And Jim, for our listeners, can you give sort of a thumbnail, a sketch of the synopsis? And I mean, I've sort of given it, but...
Yeah, you have. But basically, for starters, the story is only 5 years old. Just 5 years old. It took place in 2009. So most pictures you think of Seabiscuit or Secretariat, these are 40 years old, 80 years old. So this is recent history. And this horse came out of nowhere. It was a $9,500 yearling. So again, one of those great stories. There's a horse racing right now, California Chrome, that people are talking about. Yeah. But this is a horse that costs very little. And it was a couple of cowboys out of Roswell, New Mexico, who were real cowboys. These are bar-consuming, tequila-drinking, bar-fighting guys who decided to buy their very first thoroughbred together in New Mexico. They found this horse up in Canada. They secured the horse, and it didn't win a race, but it had qualified previously for the Kentucky Derby. And unbeknownst to a lot of people, they said, you shouldn't trailer this horse back to Kentucky from New Mexico, but they did. They took the horse back. Obviously, it went off at 50-1, hence the title of the film. And so I love these stories, these fish out of water, cowboys, black-hatted, leather, Harley-driving nuts who decided to go take on the Blue Bloods. Mm-hmm. So it's really a bit about class, the way the class system works in racing. And you've got a great horse in Mind That Bird. We found a wonderful horse up in Canada to play him. So it's the travels and great journey of these underdogs to the Derby.
Well, and what he just said about casting the horse, that's phenomenal that you could find one that is going to do the job that you need done for this film. But and also your actors were, that was another casting process that
was
quite interesting on how they reached out to you in various ways.
No, it was. Well, for starters, the horse, I looked at 400 head of horses to find this one and found him up in Calgary. Because once you get the right horse, a lot of these films use 7, 8, 9 horses for their movie.
Right.
And I wanted to use one, and I found one. So I found a 3-year-old thoroughbred who had been on the racetrack, had raced, who was in great shape, found him, up in Calgary.
Sunday Rest? Is that
Sunday Rest is the horse's name. And he does every scene in the movie. So he actually does the racing. He does the bits with the hose. He does put all the tricks on him, a very bright 3-year-old. So I was fortunate to get a great horse.
And now, how what did his rider look like? Did he need like the brown hay with the peanut M&Ms, or how did was he an elitist?
Was he a bit was of a bit of an elitist? Yeah, I must say, one of the hardest things was just to get him to eat a donut, and we had to do several concoctions of peppermints and you know and good sweets. So finally, we got him to eat some donuts in the picture. But he is a bit of an elitist. Yeah.
There's something I remember reading about how astonished you were by the how trainable he was for the art of film. Something about like he knew where his mark was, like it would be put on the ground. And
yeah, within a week, you could throw the equivalent of a frisbee, a wood frisbee. You could throw it any direction, 50, 100 yards, and wow. point, and he would race off and go put his two front hooves on there. So to do an A to B, as we call it, right, he did masterfully. The next thing was to, you're throwing your actors up on him, my leading lady in this film, Madeline Deutsch, does a lot of dialogue from his back. And so, oh. you know, she's on him, and he's a full-blown thoroughbred, ready to go, a hot blood. So to be able to prance and dance and her get her lines out was amazing. So this horse not only could hit his marks, he could take care of, you know, folks on his back. And he does a lot in this film. I mean, he's a crazy character. The real Mind That Bird was something else.
And I don't think people realize who are unfamiliar with filmmaking realize how important that is. When I was talking to when we were talking at Penn State recently about the beating, I met Julian Doyle, who has worked with the editor and was a DP on most of the Python films, the early Python films, including Holy Grail. Yeah. And they talked about, the fact that they knocked the coconuts together for the horse
for the hooves
was primarily a monetary decision. But they said, you know, if you put a bunch of Brits up on horses who've never been up on horses before, he said, you set up a shot. It's not... And you get everything ready to go. That horse changes their footing. You have to relight the shot. And it's not only that the horse moves. The gentleman on top of the horse moves, or the person on top of the horse moves a mile. That's so hugely important.
No, dialogue on horseback is like cats. It's not easy.
Like herding
to wrangle. It's that tough. Yeah.
And Sunday Rest, I'm just looking at his bio that's been prepared.
He has
here.
A bio, you bet. He's doing more movies than I am. He's already got his second feature after this.
We actually have him right here.
There he was.
But the synergy is he was foaled February 17th, 2009.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So he's but he's up in Vancouver shooting away on another film.
No, Jim, are there...
When they're that good, you really, it's you can get hired.
I'm curious about something, and it's my naivete about this, but are there such things? I mean, I know that people who have like high-end cars, they have agents to represent their cars. It's the same thing with horses?
Yeah, it's a very small world, though. I mean, it is, so it's not hard to find the good horses, because obviously you're doing a Western. There's only going to be 3, 4, 5 a year, even television and theatrical features and stuff. So within that world, there's, I would call them, maybe half a dozen really great trainers, and the horse trainers know where the good horses are.
Okay.
And so it's not difficult to say, hey, I'm doing they've got a $100 million feature out there, and they need three of the best horses. They're going to call these wranglers and find out who have you got. Right. And the trainer's only as good as his horses. I mean, it's true.
Now, you said that you stuck with one horse during the whole thing. And I want to... a lot of the time, isn't the number of horses are dictated by the film wanting like a backup should something go wrong, God forbid?
I had a backup the whole time. I just never used it. So you always need a backup.
Okay.
Yeah, you're a foolish producer if you go out there, director, and you don't have a backup. So I had one ready to go. But in all honesty, I just never needed him. He was all primed and, he was standing by. But I never needed him. Yeah. So, yes, you should have a standby.
Now, in terms of human casting, one of the great stories that I read about this, because I think a lot of the, especially our actor listeners that we have, think that, you know, once you're established as an actor, you just sort of get the offer and then you accept it and move on. But Skeet Ulrich's tale about how he got the part, I wish you would share that with our listeners.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Skeet was actually the last, means the lead, it really is. He plays the trainer, Chip Woolley, and I was just weeks away from shooting. I was on location. I was scouting. I was in New Mexico. It was about midnight. I'm in bed ripping through my computer, going through emails, and one comes up from Skeet Ulrich. And I knew the name, and I knew a little of his work, not a lot in all honesty. Hadn't had a call from an agent or anything, but Skeet had just got my email and sent this forward. And all of a sudden, I clicked it on, and he had gone and went ahead and made himself up and recreates and puts himself on tape and auditions and does three scenes. And they're all there. And there, it was probably a 7 minute piece, 7 or 8 minute piece. And he had the black hat. He already had the Fu Manchu. He had everything on, and the leathers looked like a cowboy. He'd gone into his garage and kind of made it look like a makeshift little barn. But 30 seconds into it, I said, "This is my guy." I didn't need to see all three. I did, obviously. I sat, but I hired Skeet over the internet. I mean, I never met him. I never saw him. I said, but it was exactly what I needed. Love the intonation, love the look, love what he brought to it. And so Skeet did it on his own. So wow. There is that, folks.
Yeah, well, there is.
It happens.
But I mean, it's to make a 7 minute piece and hope that somebody looks at all those 7 minutes is
it's true.
One thing. But
no, it is. He went to it. Well, Skeet had enough of a name to be
exactly.
able to say that's
what I was
going to say. Yeah, because otherwise, you're right. You'd be inundated and you're not going to get to 500 probably. But luckily, it was there. And the next day, I called him and we hired him. He flew out.
What was his reaction when you called?
He said, "Thanks." No, it was good. He said, "Glad I'm." He said, "You need to meet?" I said, "I don't." I said, "You get here for rehearsals and stuff." But so he came out about a week early.
Yeah,
but, that was it.
No, I just love tales like that. Not only because of the end result is always nice to hear that the actor got the role, but that actors that are even what we would call established names still do the work, still put it in, and still market themselves.
You bet they do. No, he went beyond the Call of Duty, and yet it was just that, and it is remarkable. I'll look at the scenes he did, those three, and look at what we shot on film, and these really fine actors, they're pretty close to honing it. I mean, as much as I work with actors and love to do it and stuff, that audition's pretty close to what you get on the film.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
wow.
He really put the time and work into it. So that felt good.
Speaking of actors, Michael, before you got here, Jim and I were talking in the green room about another actor who was in it who I think is one of the great underappreciated actors is William Devane.
Of course.
And
absolutely.
Apparently he resembles, like, does he physically resemble this?
A little bit. He's in a little better shape than our real Leonard Block, Doc Block. He comes in. But what was very fun is that the week before we shot, I brought 7 of the real people in the movie. I mean, the real characters we're portraying. And I brought 7 actors from Hollywood. And I put them all together, so the 14. So I had 7 sets of tables. And you sat opposite each other and had dinner and drinks. And you could meet who it is you're playing. So we kicked off a dinner and drinks. And that went on for Skeet a month or two. I mean, he got to know Chip Woolley and Christian Kane went out with Mark and Bill Devane met Dr. Block. So it was really an evening just to kick it off. But for 14 of you to meet each other and to get into it, it was a lot of fun. So I did cast partly to type in terms of the look. I mean, Skeet Ulrich is thin and tall and has this interesting build that fits Chip Woolley, and they all did. And so, Bill Devane looks quite a bit like Doc Block. Doc Block's just a little bigger.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Well, you couldn't ask for anything more, suitable to get into a character's head, by the method of which you.
Oh yeah, just sit opposite them.
Because these cowboys are so forthcoming; they hold nothing back. Yeah, these guys tell you exactly, and they'll tear up when they talk about winning the Derby, and they'll tell you one. Chip Woolley shatters his leg in 12 pieces right before going to the Derby, and he shatters his right leg, so he's got to drive 2,000 miles with just his left leg, and he wants to take the horse by himself because that's the way he travels. Oh. I mean, these are real cowboys, but when they tell you their stories and stuff, they got so much from just not only that evening, but they spent about a month with these guys. They were on set. It was fun to have them around, actually. I enjoyed their company.
And also, what an opportunity for them to, not many people, but those that are lucky enough to have an episode like that in their life where something, some large thing like this, like being in the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah.
To relive that later and not only relive it, have it documented.
They couldn't quite believe it. And we went to the premiere, and they're scared to death, some of them. I was like, what have you done?
Yeah.
Not in a bad way, but they weren't quite sure. They sat there a little hesitant till the film kicked off, because I was pretty good about keeping it from everybody. I didn't want to show them rough cuts and what do you think. I wasn't that way. But it is pretty cool. I think 5 years from the fact, the real event, now it's historically down for them to see.
And that too, the fact that it is such recent history. Not like Seabiscuit or something.
No, they're reliving it. And even shooting at Churchill Downs with a real jockey, Calvin Burrell, who is a Hall of Famer, 3-time Kentucky Derby winner. He was in the movie. He played himself. And so when we recreated the race, a portion of the race, and we're in the winner's circle, he just said, "This is uncanny. This is crazy." He said, "I feel like I've just won the Derby again." I mean, we're in that winner's circle. The roses go up over the horse. The horse is rearing and hot. And I've got, my hundreds of extras right around him screaming. He said, "Boy, do this every day. I'm into this. So the actors had a good time. They had the real sets to play with.
Now, Mr. Burrell, the jockey, how was he? As far as did he have any acting experience?
He had no acting experience. You know, Calvin's late 40s, and he's a Cajun boy with a third grade education. I mean, honest to God, I sent him the screenplay, and he said, "What's this?" And I said, "Well, it's the script." And he said, "Well, I don't really read. I ride." And he was dead serious. And so I talked to his wife and said, "This ought to be an interesting process." She said, "No, I'll read it to him at night. We'll get through it." And I said, "Great." So this is spot on. So Skeet had his first scene with him. I was smart to put Skeet with him the first day. So he was rather nervous and came into it. And I think we went through the lines maybe 200 times before we stepped in front of the camera. I just gave him my trailer for 2 hours and said, "Repeat after." I mean, literally, let's work on this. Because he'd never worked. And by the end of the afternoon of that first day, Calvin took over. He completely understood the story. He said, "Let me just kind of do it in my words because it can work better for me. And I can work that way beautifully." So,
Calvin, he sort of paraphrased.
Paraphrase a little bit. Yeah. And then he said, "Man, I feel so good. You're in my home now," because we started shooting in Kentucky. And it was wonderful having his input. So he comes out of this, I think, as well as anybody. I mean, emotionally, he's the center of this film at the end of the picture.
Now, the other people that the other real life characters, did any of them make it into the film in even a passive way?
Everybody has a cameo. I have to do it. So even Mind That Bird is there. The real horse has a cameo.
Wow.
Chip Woolley. I put everybody in the backgrounds of my picture.
Really?
And I ask them if they want to partake. I've done it in all my films. And so it's, I mean, the real story. So it's fun to have them. They're either in a bar scene sitting there and they've got a hat on, or I just enjoy. I said, if you want to be a piece of it, you be there. So it might be 5-10 seconds, but they're all there.
And according to IMDb, you're in a couple of them too. You seem to be recurring as a doctor.
I am a good doc. I tell you, I'm a good doc, and I never take credit. So don't. But I'm in some films. It's just fun to kind of put on the beard for a day or the hat,
and you're there.
Walk through, and you're there.
Yeah.
Just, even if it's for, as I say, 5, 10, 20 seconds, you're in it. There's a little piece of you. Yeah. That's how I remember time, because I've invested, as you guys have, your life in entertainment one way or another. And so my kids say, "Dad, what year was that?" I just know it vis-a-vis the release dates of these films, or I know what I was doing in Wyatt Earp. I was the doctor for 3 hours, then I went back to producing the film. But so I know my life just vis-a-vis the release dates of films.
Other colleagues of yours who are producer, director, writers as passionate and as, I find it interesting, very interesting, your style of what you go through to get to where you want to get.
I would not be the one to ask, because I don't know. I don't honestly know how passionate they are. I'm always doing my thing, you know, or whatever I'm involved in, and have always been passionate about making films. So I think it would be hard pressed to be much more so, only in the sense that I've lived and breathed like a project like this for 3.5 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, the moment I saw the Derby in 2009, visually, it's the most stunning race I've seen in my life. I own racehorses. I know races. I've done documentaries for a long time on sports. So I saw something remarkable. I saw something so stunning. You can go on YouTube and just hit the 2009 Kentucky Derby, and you watch that race, you'll know why you made this movie.
I know.
I mean, that alone is
I watched
amazing.
It 2 days ago. I watched it.
I love working with horses, and that union of a jockey and a horse going 40 miles an hour, I find it's fascinating. So, but if you're in this business, you better be passionate. You guys know it.
Well,
the ups and downs and the hard knocks. If you're not in love with what you do, but try something else.
But also, Jim, you seem to have, for someone with your resume, you seem to have a lot of to be far more hands-on than others I've read about. I mean, like, just in terms of like finding locations and things like that, which would normally just fall to a location scout. But you were really on the ground talking to the local vendors in that area. You found the bar and the way.
I love finding locations. I mean, for me, if you're a producer, a good producer, and I produce this film, the smartest thing to give your director, which was the other side of my brain, is every shot at making a great film. So if I can put him in 40 great locations that you can walk onto, I didn't really have much of an art department and or budget. But if I can look at 20 bars and I found the great bar to have this fight in where the film opens, the owner and the trainer actually met in a bar fight. But I need that bar to speak for itself. I didn't want to walk in and have to dress it and redo the tables, and I wanted to be able to throw a real fight. And so when you find that bar, I'd rather spend three extra days finding that location that just smells right, looks right, the owners are with me, and I can walk in on the given day, do what I need to do for 10 or 12 hours, and get the heck out.
And you were actually on your way to look at another bar.
I was.
You saw pass a sign.
Yeah,
and it called out to you.
It did. I was going to head back, and I said, no, there's just one more little road to go up.
Right.
What is it? 5 more miles back up the New Mexico landscape. And so I came upon this little town in Ponderosa. I thought, Ponderosa, New Mexico. It's not even, I don't know if it's on the map, but there was the bar. And the owners were inviting and said, come on in, gotta get you a beer. I said, you betcha. But the minute I walked in, it was just, it felt right. So
it has to feel a little bit like Christmas when you find that place.
Oh, well, that one did, because it was a good 20th bar. And I was, you know, you start drinking a bit. So I had to find it.
You had to find it.
Bar 20.
No, we're going to continue with these amazing stories here, but we're going to call over to the El Portal.
Before we do that, I got one thing to read here, Michael. I'm going to this a little PSA, if you will. This is the Partners of DORIS, P-O-D. It's made up of parents, educators, and community members. It's a 501c nonprofit organization committed to raising and dispersing funds to pay for arts programs removed by budget cuts and to seeking out and capturing new quality learning opportunities for the advancement of the students of DORIS Place Elementary, and to contribute also to the continued beautification and safety of that Los Angeles Elysian Valley neighborhood. The Keep the Music Playing benefit will take place this Saturday, May 24th, 1 p.m. in the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion, where 10 of the students from DORIS Place will be performing alongside L.A. Philharmonic's concertmaster Bing Huang and concert pianist Joanne Pierce Martin, as well as actor cellist Dermot Mulroney. Did you know he played the cello?
I did not know that either.
This is at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion in the fifth floor hall. Tickets and information about this event on May 24th, as well as a fine arts festival beginning on the 23rd, can be found at podpartnersofdoris.org. And a friend of mine, Mia Porter, told me about this.
Yeah.
And it's a fundraising thing because she told me a heartbreaking story that happened to some of the LAUSD schools, that they lost their funding, their arts funding, like mid-semester. So students who were actually playing instruments had to go back and return the instruments
mid-semester
back to the schools because of the arts funding cuts.
Wow.
So things like this that sort of preempt that are very, very important. So that website.
Absolutely. Glad we could help them out.
Website, again, podpartnersofdoris.org. Support them if you would. I'm going to put the phone number in here, Michael, to contact Jay Irwin.
Yes.
And if you would read the, I'll deal with the technology. And if
I will do that.
Intro
and,
that they are so do.
Ladies and gentlemen, what Paul is doing is we're going to speak to Jay Irwin, who is the co-manager of the historic El Portal Theater in the NoHo Arts District, North Hollywood. And we're going to talk about an act that's going to be appearing there at the theater over the weekend, and a very classy lady by the name of Neil Adams. And for those of you who know that name, she was married to a very big movie idol by the name of Steve McQueen. And what she is, when she first burst onto the Broadway stage, wowing audiences in the original productions of Kismet in 1953 as one of the three princesses of Ababu. Am I say that right? Ababu,
oh,
right?
You got me.
Yeah. And in The Pajama Game in 1956, the role of Gladys, who danced the famed Bob Fosse choreography to Steam Heat. And Neil has continued to enchant audiences far and wide. The Lives of Me, a musical celebration of her memories and the stages of her life, will play at the El Portal Theater for just two shows this weekend. And later in the hour, we will...
Right now.
Yeah, we're going to go back to Jim, but we're going to talk to Jay about Neil.
And I got him on the electric...
She had some trouble singing.
Yeah, but hopefully all will be well by this weekend.
Be fine. 81 years old.
818-795-2757.
And there we go. So hopefully Jay will call us back. Did you give him the number?
I did not.
Okay.
I didn't expect that.
Well, we'll try him again shortly. But this allows us to go back to talk to 51, because I wanted to ask you something, Jim, about Churchill Downs. This is... you know, you had to shoot there, obviously, and Churchill Downs is sort of the Wrigley Field of racetracks. It has a very, very distinct look. You know exactly what you're looking at. How receptive were they to shooting there?
Yeah, I knew going in that they'd only given Seabiscuit, I think, 3 days and Secretariat 4 days, and they're tough. And some of those films, I think Secretariat relocated to Louisiana. And going in, obviously, it didn't quite have the clout of the studios. This is an independent film. But my take was I was also a horse owner. I've raced horses over 20 years, and that went over big time. So it was great. I was able to sit in the boardroom, talk the talk. The guys knew I knew racing inside and out. And I said, look, I know how to handle, you know, a jock's room and a paddock and the finish line. And I know the reverence of shooting here at Churchill Downs and what it means. And my crew will watch themselves, and I need 2 weeks. And so they said, 2 weeks? We can't, you know, I got 2 weeks. So it was great. And not only did I want 2 weeks, I said, I want the very stall, not just the stable or the barn. I want the very stall that Mind That Bird was in. I want the same set of shavings. I want the same. I need it all to be as it was. Oh. And so they did that. And I said, I need water trucks, you know, to my avail on the track, because it had rained the night before. And they said, well, we really don't. I said, no, we really do. If we're going to recreate this, let's not mess around. And so to Churchill Downs, goodness, they did it for me. And so they gave me everything I needed. So they ended up being a partner.
And you had the actual jockey during all of that, too.
Oh, the jockey, not only did I get Calvin Burrell brought his boots, and you see him scrape the rail in this race. And he's got three holes in his boots from scraping the rail. He's known as Calvin Burrell. So he scraped his boots. He wore the same silks. This God knows, probably the same underwear. I mean, this guy was into it. So he saddles his own horse. He brings his tack. You know, I saw that early, and he said, "Well, I'm up at 4:30." I mean, he's up every four. So this was late call for him. 5:30 was late. It was a late call.
And took all the tack off after shooting and everything, just like he was.
He was doing it. No. So it you hire the pros there. It works.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's give him another try here. We'll give him
one more try.
One more try.
You know, the poor guy is in the middle of moving, so he's actually stepping in for Neil because she can't be with us today.
And
so
when we come back from that, I also want to talk to Jim about the astounding marketing thing that they did with this film, which I think is so unique.
Yeah.
So we'll give him a... you know, every time I do this, this never fails. Every time I do this, it saves the number, and it calls me, and it calls back immediately. And then the one time I need it to, it doesn't do it. So let's see. The one time I need technology to work to my benefit, it doesn't. So let's give this a – we should be hearing it ring shortly. He actually did call in while I was talking, but I didn't want to interrupt Jim when he was talking. So.
Hello.
Hello, Mr.
Jay.
Irwin.
Hi, guys. You know, I'm listening to the show, and I heard you call my voicemail.
Oh, yes.
I'm sorry about that.
Well, we cut it off before any obscenity happened, Jay, so we make sure that, because we know how that outgoing message of yours is.
That's great.
Thank you so much
for
joining us. And for our listeners, can you sort of give them a little sort of synopsis of the force of nature that's going to be performing at the El Portal this weekend?
Well, Neil is something else. I mean, she is, you gave a great description of her early career, and both she and Steve McQueen, her first husband, kind of came from like an orphan background, and that's what bound them together, was finding their own way and as young people, and then meeting each other that way. So she's always been really strong and independent, and she's now an octogenarian, and she is still going strong. It's going to be very fascinating to hear her talk about her relationships and her career and her life, as well as sing, 12, 15 songs. It's going to be compelling stuff.
Well, we have on our Facebook page, it's facebook.com/stateoftheartsLA, we have this photo essay shoot from Life magazine with Steve McQueen, and
is that her in a cute white bikini?
Well, I noticed that one, but the one where she's nude in the tub is actually one of my favorites.
That's what he remembers.
Does it look like they had a blast the time together in those pictures?
It's 1963. It's Steve McQueen, and a lot of people don't realize Steve McQueen became, you know, he was a hippie for his day. He really became quite an activist, and did a lot of good. And people think of him just as a actor, but this show sounds fascinating. I can't imagine the tales that she has to tell, not only with working with McQueen, but also with Alfred Hitchcock and Billy Wilder and all these people, iconic people.
Bob Fosse, it all came out of dance for her. She funneled all of her energy into dance and really the rest of her artistic career all came from dance and from focusing on that.
And Jay, this is in the studio space
the Monroe Forum.
It's our small space called the Monroe Forum that's named after good old Marilyn Monroe, who went to sixth grade at the school right behind the theater.
That's so cool.
Won a won a blue ribbon for sprinting, by the way.
Did she really?
In sixth grade.
Sprinting
she's
from
quite
the
a sprinter. Yes.
I was going
to
say
school to the theater.
No, I would say probably sprinting from male students. Oh, that would be my guess. Running the other direction.
It's good. I guess if you're going to get around, it's good to do it quickly.
Right. No, but that's good to hear because this show is cabaret style, and it actually comes right from Paris at a place called Le Café Universal. Is that the last place it was performed before?
They love her there, and she's already got a gig to go back. I think she goes back in about 2 months.
Wow.
And she's doing a week there again. Yeah, she resonates with the French. They love it.
So this opportunity to see her in a cabaret climate is just a great opportunity to have. This is,
I think in this case, too, with her talking, she generally has not talked about her relationship with Steve. She did write a book about it that's really fascinating 2 years ago, and she'll sign the book if you have it. So she doesn't generally open up about that to the public. I know her friends know about her. It's really a passionate and tumultuous relationship. So
as one would expect,
it's going to be something new for her.
Well, yeah. Those life photos, Jay, there's a video that, as Paul said, that we have on the website for the show, our show, and she actually narrates this video and those photos talks about them.
Yeah, it's just sort of, it's that photo essay of all those shots. Yeah.
So great. And I took a look at her and Steve both on the Perry Como show. I found a clip of that, which you could really tell he was not in his element, but he was doing it obviously because he loved
it for the lady.
And she was pretty much the star on that show. Doing the big dance.
Looked like Sid Charisse.
Yeah, gorgeous, beautiful.
Astonishing.
Yeah.
For those that want to attend, this is, of course, at the El Portal Theater, beautiful El Portal, one of the most beautiful venues in town.
And historic.
NoHo Arts District there. 5269 Lancashire in North Hollywood. Two shows only this weekend, May 24th at 8. And
Saturday night at 8 o'clock and Sunday at 3.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you guys are aware of something just announced that's happening tomorrow on our main stage. We're typically an apolitical kind of a venue, but tomorrow night there is a fundraising concert for Bobby Shriver,
who's
running for L.A. supervisor.
Yes.
He's Maria Shriver's brother and the son of Sergeant Shriver. I mean, you know, long history of politicians and affiliation with the Kennedy family. But the thing that's exciting for me about it is it's going to feature T-Bone Burnett, Oscar winner, Grammy winner, T-Bone Burnett, and a guy playing guitar with him named Doyle Bramhall, who I am chagrined to say I didn't know who he was. And then I looked him up, and the guy is fresh off tours with Eric Clapton and Roger Waters, and he now fronts one of my favorite bands called Double Trouble, which is he is the new Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Holy cow.
The guy is just spectacular, and the fact that the two of them are going to play together tomorrow night, really special.
Is Bobby going to be there? Bobby Shriver?
You never know.
Never know.
Bobby will be there. Definitely address the crowd. I'm sure of that. Yeah.
One of our past guests.
Is Arnold going to be there? I don't know.
Arnold
will be there or Maria. It'd be quite. It'd be on TMZ if Arnold and Maria.
It would be. And so I'm assuming all the information for that is also at elportaltheater.com.
You know what? Because it just came down yesterday, literally. It's on our Facebook page. There's a poster for it, and then the reservations for it go through his campaign office.
Okay.
I think there's a website or a link on that poster on our Facebook page. If you go to El Portal Theater on Facebook, like us, and you can follow us that way and see everything that's coming up as well.
Okay. Awesome.
We got a really fun summer coming up. Always Patsy Cline. We're going to run all July.
Sally Struthers.
Sally Struthers. Yeah. It's going to be a really fun time coming up.
And the phone number is 818-508-4200. Is that correct for tickets?
818-508-4200. That's our box office.
Okay. And they, of course, El Portal Theater. Theater has the R-E spelling, elportaltheater.com. And we will throw that out one more time before the end of the hour. Jay, thank you so much for finding time for us today.
Thank you, sir.
I appreciate it. And get back to the fascinating stories with Jim.
Isn't this great?
The Ulrich story is amazing. It makes me proud, you know, to hear of an actor working that hard, and the guy is still he's a big Hollywood star. So that's compelling stuff. Love it.
That's just it. And that's why he's successful, and that's why he's working, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thanks again, Jay.
All right, Jay, give Peggy
our
best.
Thank you very much, guys. Take care.
I will. Bye.
Bye-bye. Nice guy. And Super Peg nice. Forrest yep. over there. And also, I wanted to say, while we're throwing websites and all that information out there, I want to give the website for 50 to 1, the movie. It is, as one would expect, 50 to 1, the movie. And that's numeric. You don't write that out. 502 and then the number 1, themovie.com. And they, of course, have a Facebook presence and a Twitter presence there. So if you do searches for 50 to 1 at both of those locations, you'll get more information. And this is an expanded release now, Jim, that's coming just there. Do you know where it's playing in town this weekend?
I do. It's all, if you look up Krikorian Theaters, so it's six of the Krikorian Theaters. So it's anywhere from Vista down south, Monrovia, Downey, Buena Park. You know, so look up Krikorian Theaters. It's,
okay.
Yeah, you can do that. And then it's playing Buellton, which is up in San Ynez Valley. And it's, you know, it's spreading around the country. So yeah. We move around.
As I say all this stuff about Twitter and Facebook and technology and websites and all of this stuff, I am reminded of how I found out about the film through Nancy Meyer and the astonishing promotional thing that you did that is so unusual but so refreshing in this day and age and was so successful, encouraging to hear how successful it was. Would you share the whole idea of this rock and roll tour bus that
I live out in Calabasas and was on a walk with my dog Buster and I said, buddy, we got to do something a little different for this film. So what we're so accustomed to is we have a premiere in L.A., and your attorney and your agent, they all blow smoke, and what a lovely night you have, and you have a few too many drinks, you wake up, and that's it. It's kind of cold, ultimately, and the studio releases your film in a couple thousand screens, and you get word you have a hit, or sorry, your last 3 years weren't worth it, or right. whatever. It's cold. So I said, to heck with that. We're going to get a bus. I got a 45-foot bus from Atlanta. I took the poster art and I wrapped the entire bus beautifully. So it says 50 to 1. You've got the actors on it, and the horse and Calvin and everybody. And I told the bus to meet me in Albuquerque, New Mexico, which is where we decided to have the world premiere, rather than L.A. or New York or something. I said, look, this is where the story emanates from. This is where it should be. We shot there for 30 days. So we got a little theater, the Chemo Theater in town. 600 people showed up to kick off our tour. And so with me were five actors, a support staff of three, and a driver. So there were nine of us on this bus who traveled 15,000 miles from Albuquerque. And what I wanted to do is to go to small towns to start with, and actually all the way through seven states. But we covered seven states. We sort of mirrored the trip.
15,000 or 15?
15,000. Yeah.
15,000.
Well, you cross Texas a few times. You just try from El Paso, you know, to Houston, to Austin, to Dallas,
oh
and back.
Gosh.
I mean, you can – oh, no. The bus went all night, all day. No, we stopped in little tiny towns. I said, this isn't – we're not just going to hit the big cities. I wanted to go to these little tiny towns where you'd never see a Hollywood star and or, you know, a producer, whatever it was. So we pulled into like Ruidoso, New Mexico, and Alamogordo, and these little tiny towns. We'd go to the local theater. We'd pull the bus up, and we told them ahead of time, vis-a-vis your show, like radio, and they'd say, we're coming. We had 200-300 people sometimes waiting in these godforsaken these little places, and we'd pull up, and we'd come out, and we'd set up a couple of benches and tables. We'd sign posters for them. We'd tell them stories. They'd see the trailer if the film wasn't playing yet. In many ways, we timed it so that the people – we actually parked the bus outside the theater, and as soon as the film let out, they would come out. So 200 people would come out, 150, whatever, and we'd be right there. So 5 minutes after seeing the movie, they could come out and embrace these guys, take pictures with them, get their selfies done. And so it was me giving back, but also I got a ton from this. I learned a great deal. It was great to see an audience all across the country – you know, loving your product. And that's the give back. So it was 36 days on a bus, one bathroom, one shower. We did live at 5. I mean, at 5 a.m., you're ready to go. Wow. So you're up. Try to get five actors up at 4:20 a.m. and who's on first and who's always doing what and all
wow.
that. So
well, we have a
great journey. Yeah.
On our
again, to your passion, sir.
Yeah. Well, it was.
On our Facebook page, facebook.com/stateoftheartsLA, I actually have already posted a picture of you guys in front
the
of
bus.
The bus.
Great.
And up there. And there's actually a link to the website for the show, for the film as well. So for those listeners who are listening to this after the fact or even now, well, don't leave us. Stay on the air with us. But down the road, check out the Facebook page. You can see the pictures we're talking about and also the link to the site where all of this is described. I just think that Nancy was described, Nancy Meyer.
She was the tour manager.
What a wonderful woman. What
a wonderful woman. At first I said, I'll take this on. I can handle a lot. I'll set everything up. And I said, no. I said, I need a professional who really knows. And she worked her tail off. You're on 7 days a week, and you're up doing live at 5, and you're doing the news at 11. So, but she was a godsend to have.
She was just saying that one of those things where you're going into a town and you don't have sometimes you don't have a whole lot of lead in.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you get that word out? I mean, how do you get that word out when you have a few hours to get the word?
Well,
out?
No, we all have. Thank goodness we got the computers working. We had a hot satellite on board, and we were doing it. So 4 or 5 of us are literally on their computers on your cell phones, and we would hit a town and all of a sudden we'd have 7 interviews within an hour.
Yeah,
and so
really.
We did, I must have done, sometimes 10 radio shows by noon. I mean, you pull into town and they said, boy, we haven't had this before.
You had to feel like the circus. You were the circus.
We were the circus, without a doubt. Great thing was both Christian Kane and Todd Lowe were with me, and they play guitars. They're great musicians. They've got their own bands. So they'd be strumming away. So we pulled them into our own cabarets and did our own show. I mean, it really was a traveling circus. And wow. I'm a big fan of getting on the road if you can. So it was, it did prove fruitful. It really was a good thing to do for us.
Well, and also just the fact that it sort of replicates, it's a metaphor for the journey that this horse took.
Exactly.
I mean,
I was thinking.
Well, it was, and the horse was 30 lengths back, in the race. It came out of the gate and got slammed, and I felt like we did too. This was not a film that the studios embraced. I showed it to all the studio heads, and they didn't want the film. It wasn't going to make an instant $1 billion, and that was obvious to me as well. So I said, I have a choice. I either can just lay low and go straight to video. And I said, I don't want to do that. I made this for the big screen. I'm very proud of the film. And we'll take it on ourselves. So it's been a lot of work, but I'm glad I've done it this way. So we felt we're 30 lengths back. We are mind that bird, but we're making it. Each day it opens another territory, another city, and I feel good about that. You kind of control your own destiny.
Well, and it's so personal. I mean, just based on that alone and the energy that has gone into it, just by listening to what you said about it today, I mean, if I knew nothing about the history of this picture, I would definitely go see it.
Yeah, well, that's great.
Yeah,
no,
it's absolutely. I mean, you're touching hearts, and you're
well, that's the
doing
idea.
All the right things.
Well, people feel. I mean, when you see cowboys crying and clapping and standing, I mean, it played like Rocky at a lot of these theaters.
Oh,
and
I'm sure.
You see these big guys sitting there, just because when this horse, you kind of know the ending of the movie, but hopefully, it's in the journey is a good one too. But when you bring these guys to their knees, I couldn't have been happier. So as a filmmaker, you're like, okay, it worked.
Well,
so
I think that a lot of people think that guys, cowboys, or even to make a vast generalization, southern people, or people that live in more rural communities, that the fact that they don't wear, there's this assumption that their emotions are guarded and all that. But you tap into that passion, you tap into the way they feel strongly about these things, and they're just as they're just as vocal and just as passionate as
absolutely.
Anyone.
I know that we're getting ready to come to the end of the show. Should we baptize Jim?
Well, I wanted to ask Jim. I didn't get a chance to talk to Jim about this. When Michael says baptized, we always ask our guests to share when we have performers on, we ask them to share a mishap, a mistake, something that happened during performance that's either funny or embarrassing. But I imagine you have to have a tale from the road of this, of something. something, some near disaster that was averted, or some funny story that happened with all that, with a rock and roll bus and a good amount of drinking going on. I can't imagine that there's not.
I mean, it's all kinds of. Look, how much can we really tell here? I know the show's not rated, but no, there were a lot of funny things happening. One thing, we were Skeets with me, and his brother was head of marketing or marketing a NASCAR event, and we were so excited to. I've never been to a NASCAR race, or I just wasn't that into car racing, but I said it's kind of analogous to horse racing. I'd love to go. So it's the biggest brouhaha. I mean, you have to get 1,000 passes and go through 20 different things to get the gigantic bus into the infield. Can it make it through the tiny tunnel? Can all this happen? And you have to do it the night before. You've got to be parked the night before and everything. So we go through all of this litany that you have to do to get cleared and passes and phone calls. So finally, we're the green light. We got it. We're into NASCAR. And so we drive in at night, and we've done with our day of press. We come in maybe 11 at night, and we pull in, and we get an escort, a police escort, and we are parked right at the finish line. I mean, we pull right up at this darn thing, and it's the Duck Dynasty 500. So all the Duck Dynasty yeah. guys are there, and you meet the Duck Dynasty guys, and they're saying, "Oh Lord," and they're pulling out the Bibles and stuff. And I'm at NASCAR, and it's a different world. So we're all there, and we are so pumped up, and you go out and you have some beers and your tequila, and you cannot wait for the sun to rise. So lo and behold, the sun doesn't rise. It pours and it rains, and it was postponed and it was put off, and we have to leave. And so the tale was, I mean, here we couldn't believe it. The best parking place on earth. There's 170,000 people in the stands. I mean, it is crazy. They're all wrapped in their saran, hoping that. And I said, it's not going to stop raining. The forecast, folks, is for 24 hours of pouring. So we hopped in the bus because we had obligations. The following morning, we had to leave. So, the tale be told. The greatest setup ever for NASCAR. Yeah. I got to meet Jimmy Johnson, all the great drivers. We did the pre-interviews. We met the Duck Dynasty, and I never saw a flag go. No one raced. So, but a million stories from the road, and
but still a killer experience.
No, it was. Yeah.
Wow. We have had a great hour, a great fantastic. 15 minutes with Oscar winner Jim Wilson, and the film is 50-1, and just I can only go off the trailer, but I will be in the theater to see it.
No,
and once again, it's 50-1themovie.com. Skeet Ulrich.
And Neil Adams over at the El Portal Theater.
Yes.
Right?
And that's this weekend only, 24th
weekend.
And 25th.
That's right.
What a pleasure, sir. Really enjoyed it.
Well, thank
absolutely
you guys for
too.
Having me. This
thank
has been
you,
a
sir.
Pleasure. You bet.
All right. Michael?
Yes, thank you, Paul. See
you
on the radio.
Week. See you next week.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.